You are Locked On Rangers, your daily Texas Rangers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On the Texas Rangers. I'm Bryce Paddock with the Dallas Morning News, here today with part two of my talk with Grant Schiller. We get in a little bit more into Dane Dunning and Avery Weems, the importance of getting a four in your rotation, what it's going to take for the Rangers front office to get competitive again, why it's so weird they're bringing in a new GM with no GM experience right now, and a little bit more about the Rangers situation in general in the winter meetings as they are wrapping up. So without further ado, I'll get to part two with Grant Schiller right after this. That's really solid to see. I mean, I know the Rangers, I'm pretty sure I saw somewhere that the Rangers are going to give him a chance to start the year in the minor leagues. I mean, how old is he? He's 24, right?
Right. I think he's 24. He has not played full season ball yet. So I think you'll see him start either at High A Hickory now or Double A Frisco. Right. High A Hickory. It's going to take some time.
That is going to take a hot minute. Wait, what happened to the dudes?
They are now Low A.
Huh.
And then Round Rock is your new AAA affiliate.
I did see that. That was important to get to the people. Round Rock is back in the hands of the people where it belongs. Where did Houston end up in their AAA?
There was Sugarland now, who's going from independent to AAA.
Huh. Good for them. Man, that is real close.
The former team of Roger Clemens, I think his son, and I think Rafael Palmeiro played a couple games with them before he played with Cleveland.
I am sure that Rafael Palmeiro did play there, and right. I know the others are spot on. Man, that is going to be really exciting for them. And I know it's just good to have a minor league team that's like 5 minutes away from you and like not having to fly people from Nashville. Not that there was a whole glut of people in AAA that were going to make a difference, that there wasn't even a AAA last year. So we've only really had Nashville for one season.
Right.
Even though it feels like forever that the whole Round Rock or Nashville or whatever debate makes it. But I don't know. I feel really good about having Round Rock back and being able to go to theoretically at some point, maybe this summer, depending on what a million different things, to be able to go to a AAA game in Round Rock and see some Rangers players. But I mean, who's even going to be there? I mean, they're just going to be the top arms, right? Is that basically going to be it? And then some quad A people.
Yeah. You know, it's tough to even project it after no season last year. I would guess that Leody probably starts there next year. You'll get a 28-year-old Andy Ibañez back there.
Oh, my God.
Which will be very exciting. And then probably whoever loses out on the last starting pitching spots.
So probably quite a few of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
it'll be interesting to see if they make Hearn a starter again and put him in AAA or if they leave him in the bullpen, which I think is what they'll end up doing. But I know he wants to start again.
Do you think he has the capability to start? Because I saw him start, I think, once in Frisco right when he got here, fresh out of Pittsburgh. And I don't know, he looked all right. I mean, it was a little shaky, but I don't know. I think he has the potential, but I'm curious to your thoughts on Hearn as a starter versus a reliever.
You know, it's weird, and the answer is I don't know. So when you started with Frisco right after the trade, with the Kellett trade, I thought that he was a starter. I know there had been a lot of talk about him being a reliever, but I thought that he was a starter absolutely because he had a really good changeup. And it was the slider that was the developmental pitch that you thought, if that can just be an average pitch, that's going to make him a starter. Now, last year out of the bullpen, he was pretty much fastball slider. He barely used the changeup. So I don't know if he lost the feel for it when he got injured and missed so much time, or if he's just more comfortable going to the slider out of the bullpen, if he thinks that pitch has gotten better and past the changeup. If he still has the change that he had prior to the injury, I think he can start. If he doesn't, then I think he's a pure reliever.
Mm-hmm. I really like seeing the development of the slider. And he had a pretty solid year last year. I mean, he was a guy who really, really needed the bounce back year. I mean, gosh, talk about bad major league debut. Like, not for really that much fault of his own, but just like what I think it was, he got an out and four walks and then ended up getting hurt and missed the rest of the season, which,
yeah,
in terms of, like, there's not really a much worse debut that you can have. Like, you can't have a worse debut as a hitter. Like, even if you go, like, over four and have a strikeout, I mean, like, maybe you like run into somebody in a collision in the field and like make the other player drop the ball for a game losing error. Like, that's the only other thing that I could think would be like a worse major league debut than what Taylor Hearn, but all credit to him for fighting back and getting back into the big leagues and showing, like, hey, I belong here. I know I belong here because I have the nasty, nasty stuff that I have. And he's just one of the most interesting guys in the Rangers system, in the Rangers team. He's not even in the Rangers system anymore. He's just a big leaguer now, which is kind of cool. There was somewhere that I was going with this, but I can't remember where I was going. So I want to get back to, that's where I was going with this. Just the return of a guy who, even though you only have 1 year control, has back-to-back top 10 Cy Young finishes, or fifth and sixth, I should say. Like, top 10, everyone always assumes like it's eight or ninth. But like fifth and sixth, he probably should have finished higher. If he wasn't on the worst team in the American League last year, probably would have finished top three. Was really, really consistent as well. But a guy like this a few years ago would have gotten a major, major return. I mean, he's on an $8 million deal, and he's going to be probably a top 10 pitcher in baseball next year. Why is it that so many of these like deals that like the Cole Hamels deal? I mean, granted, Cole Hamels had a lot more oomph behind him, had a World Series, had some more top five Cy Young finishes, also had more years on his contract. They also got Jake Diekman in that, so that was a huge, huge deal. But there aren't nearly as many like throw in like three or four top 10 prospect deals as there used to be. Is that a trend that's going to stick around baseball? Is there anything that could make people reverse course on that? Or is it because baseball is getting cheaper and cheaper and values prospects more and more?
I think at some point it's going to flip, and teams are going to win by pushing their chips in. They're going to go the Dombrowski route, and it's going to pay off for them. Just at the end of the day, I mean, it seems like teams have gotten so risk averse with their own prospects, and they just hate seeing them go off and succeed elsewhere. That's absolutely the trend around baseball. You're right on that. I think, like anything, it's going to be circular. It's going to come back to where maybe it's the developmental teams that really have confidence that they're going to develop more prospects out of non-prospects in the future as that gets more and more advanced. Or maybe it's just being more aggressive and being willing to outpay for your competition so you can win now. But eventually there's going to be teams that take advantage of this market, give up their prospects, and they're going to win.
I mean, I feel like that's just a real bummer for the Rangers, because like this is the first time that they're in the rebuild in forever, and like they're at an all-time low of like people wanting to pay top prospects for elite talent. They've got a couple of elite talents, and this is all building up to say, for many, many reasons, why I would be absolutely terrified for the Rangers to trade Joey Gallo this offseason. Like, I feel like there could not be a worse time. Granted, like, given like his production last year, given his contract situation, you've got what, 2-3 more years of control? I think it's just two. And you got to go through arbitration, which is going to be the weirdest arbitration ever, at least that I've seen in Rangers history for the last few years. But like, I feel like that would be the dumbest thing for the Rangers to do right now, because I mean, who would even be out there to go make that trade? And what kind of return could you even expect for him?
Yeah, you have to let him rebuild value after last year. I think everybody around the league probably still believes in him, but the Rangers aren't going to have leverage coming off the season he had. So you know he's going to hit eventually. You know he's going to get the ballpark out of his head. So you have to let him rebuild the value, and then probably trade him either in July or next offseason if you're not going to try and extend him.
And I think part of the reason he had such a bad, like, there's a million factors. Like, anyone having a bad year this year, like, I am willing to write it off because it's a pandemic, and he started the year on such a weird note. I mean, I'm sure the Willie thing rattled him. Like, seeing Willie go down like that, like, had an impact on him. And then the COVID test, the positive, not positive, inconclusive, positive, whatever, they said he didn't feel any symptoms for, and just completely wrecked his spring training or his summer training, whatever the heck we're calling the second one. I can't imagine how someone who is so routine oriented, like a baseball player, to be able to like not only just get ready for like a normal or the season like the normal way, for last season, not like a regular normal, but like having to come into that and then missing so much of the second spring training and also the pandemic protocols, and also maybe did I have COVID? What am I have to worry about for that? Also, I have to be the entire offense for this garbage offensive team. So, of course, I'm going to swing out of my shoes on every single pitch. Like, all of that, I feel like, is why he underperformed last year. Not to make excuses for him, but, like, we all know he's a better player than that, right?
Yeah. No. I don't think there's anybody around baseball who would think that last year's anywhere close to where it really is. There is a ton of mitigating factors, like you said. And when we're looking at this team in the bigger picture, like we've kind of been doing the last few minutes, it's also important to note that while this is a good return, given the current state of how baseball, getting a potential number three starter and a big league reliever isn't going to turn around the fate of the franchise. This is the first of many moves that needs to happen for this rebuild to come close to working.
Yeah, and the thing that sucks is that, I mean, we all saw how bad the Rangers were last year, and, like, we think, yeah, that's bottoming out. It's not going to get any worse. And then you're like, oh, God, every fifth day we don't have Lance Lynn. Who is the ace? Who is the quote-unquote ace, the most loosely used? It's Kyle Gibson. That is where
we are. I think it's Dane Dunning. I think it is. Kyle Gibson was really bad last year. And he was really bad at the end of the year before that while he was battling, I think it was ulcerative colitis. And then last year, it was the same kind of from day one. You saw even in the preseason game, the Rockies crushed him. And then that carried right over into the season. So I have concerns about Gibson going forward. I hope that he can have a good front half of this year and rebuild some value. Because I think that Dane Dunning might be your best starting pitcher day one, which is a problem.
That is definitely a problem. But, I mean, I have more faith in Gibson than Jordan Lyles. I mean, is Lyles even going to be in the rotation halfway through next year?
I think even opening day, if Palumbo, Allard, and Hearn or whoever else you bring in or any other young guy you're looking at, if they're ready, you just go ahead and bump Lyles to the bullpen.
I think that makes sense. I mean, is Burt going to be ready for the beginning
he won't
of the
be ready. He won't be ready at the start of the year, but I would think that they would bring in another pitcher or two to at least vie for the starting rotation spots. Or maybe it's Kyle Cody. It could be him as well.
Honestly, I would be excited to see that. I mean, I know last year was kind of a weird year for everybody, but he was, besides Lance Lynn, like the one bright spot out of the starting rotation for basically anybody. I mean, Allard was a real mixed bag, and we had a few nice things happening in the bullpen, even with Leclerc being out. I kind of forgot that Leclerc was out for the whole year. Like, I kind of forgot that he's coming back. Do you feel like Jose Leclerc might be the next move the Rangers make?
If he's dominant like he was a couple years ago, yes. You mean he's going to be a guy whose stuff is so good, it's just kind of going to kind of vary with how his command comes and goes. So if he shows a couple months that it's back to where it was at its height, which was the anomaly at this point, I think they'll move him. If not, I don't know that they're going to find the value that they're going to expect for him. It might be a little bit longer before he gets traded.
Yeah, so it's not going to be anything happening in the winter meetings for the next
how many days? No, they'll definitely let him come back and rebuild value, be healthy, hopefully go back to the tops of his command, which is playable, and kind of like Gallo, let him be his true talent, hopefully, at the beginning half of next year and then look into trading.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any moves that the Rangers would make besides just some filler free agent moves for the rest of this week and for the next, I guess, just week after that? Because after that, everything kind of dies down.
I think it'll be pretty much just fillers. I don't know that they have any other big pieces to move. You could see them go back and pursue the Rugi for Eovaldi trade again. You could see them try and bring in a few different positions, but I think it is going to be fillers, like you said.
Man, the Red Sox needing a second baseman. You know, I hear they used to have a pretty good young second baseman. This guy named Mookie Betts. Man, if only they could have held on to him. You know, there is no way they could have held on to him, right? Well, if only they just paid him market value.
Yeah, I mean, you think a big franchise, if he was any good, they'd still be there. They'd extend him. So I'm pretty sure he's bad.
I feel so bad for that poor Red Sox franchise. You know, they never had any history of success. They're just such a small market, really, really poor ownership. So I feel really bad for those fans, you know, never experienced happiness.
Especially, whole Boston City, I mean, they just take hit after hit on the sports front.
Gosh, you know, first you lose Mookie Betts, then you lose Thomas Brady. I mean, gosh, will they ever find success again?
After you replace assistant quarterback.
If we're lucky, no. But anyway, you said you had a Dane Dunning question to ask me before we head out of here.
Yes. So he had what would have been the third highest swinging strike percentage on the Rangers staff last year for pitchers with a minimum of 10 innings pitched. Can you guess the top two? One's easy, one will surprise you.
Lance Lynn?
No. Nope. They're both relievers. They're both relievers.
Okay. Well, I want to say...
You want me to give them to you?
Give me a hint first.
Okay. One of them is... Okay. Well, this can serve for both of them. Both of them were recently starters and became relievers within the last 2 years.
Okay. So one of them was Jonathan Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
Wes Benjamin?
Wes Benjamin, that's right.
What?
Second highest swinging strike rate on the team. I was shocked to see that.
That's insane. Well, he did have 23 strikeouts and 17 in the third innings.
I didn't realize he had done that well last year, because most of his innings came at the end of the year where it was all depressing and nobody really wanted to watch a whole lot.
Wait, actually, that was Taylor Hearn that had 23 strikeouts and 17 innings. He had 21 strikeouts and 22 in a third innings. So, but most of his stuff came in like mop-up duty. I mean, he had that one start, what was it, in, or not a start, but like a... What ended up being a piggyback start, because the starter, whoever it was, it could have been anybody, was so horrible. I think it was in Colorado, and he threw like four innings and gave up like one run.
Mm-hmm.
Back when the Rangers thought they might like sneak into the second AL West spot, because I don't know. I guess that's what everybody we're doing with the playoffs now.
Yeah. No. I mean, it was super surprising, and he did way better than I thought he would. It makes him a little bit more interesting moving forward, but I was stunned to see that one.
Gosh, not Mike Minor or Colby Allard?
John Hernandez and Wes Benjamin. And then one more stat I want to give you before we get off here. Dane Dunning's slider should be fun to watch. Last year, he had a 44% whiff rate on it, so 44% of the time hitters swung at it, they missed. They had a 239 wOBA off of it and a 186 expected wOBA. So his slider was very effective.
Okay.
That should be a fun pitch to watch.
Well, I do like those numbers. I like good sliders, and I like people swinging and missing when they're not the Rangers, because I see them do that enough. So, you know, if I could see it on the other side, just every once in a while, you know, there's haven't been that many like pure strikeout guys that the Rangers have had, especially as starters. I mean, even the effective ones like Lynn and Minor weren't super big strikeout guys. I mean, Mike Minor did get the 200 strikeout in a very legitimate, important moment in Rangers history that I will remember and treasure forever, even after he is long gone, which he is now. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening and subscribing. Make sure you follow Grant on Twitter at OG Shill. Follow me on Twitter at Bryce Patrick, and follow Locked On Rangers at Locked On Rangers. We'll be back later this week discussing where Lance Lynn ranks amongst the best Rangers pitchers in franchise history. I think it's going to be a really interesting episode. So make sure you tune in for that. But until next time, don't forget to enjoy baseball.